Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll check in with the United States Army Corps of Engineers, St. Paul District, get an update from Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team, and check in with the USS Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Congratulations to the soldiers and candidates in the recent Minnesota Best Warrior competition at Camp Ripley. A handful of very capable and competent soldiers have spent a weekend competing in physical and mental challenges. They pushed themselves to the limit to earn the opportunity to compete regionally and represent the Minnesota Army National Guard. To go through what they have been through in preparation for the competition says a lot about their character and the strength of the young soldiers in this state. They've been tested physically and mentally through many challenges, including a 12-mile ruck march and going before a board testing their Army knowledge. These soldiers have also excelled at soldier skills like weapons qualification and land navigation. These men and women take the occupation of being a National Guard soldier very seriously. They are role models for their peers. They are the best of the best. I am proud of each of their accomplishments and their contributions to the competent, ready force within the Minnesota National Guard.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the opening, we're going to check in today with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District. And joining us now to talk about that district is Colonel Dan Kaprowski, who is the commander. Colonel, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sir, it's been a while since we've seen you. I'm sorry we didn't have you on the show a little more often, but I understand that you're a native New Yorker. And how long have you been in the military, sir?
I am. I'm a native New Yorker. I've been in the military for 26 years, so while I'm a native New Yorker, I haven't been back there in quite a long time.
So you're a citizen of the world these days.
I am.
And sir, it looks like on your resume that you've seen quite a bit of the world. You've been to Bosnia, you've been to Iraq, you've been to Hawaii, you've been to Germany. You've been all over the place in a couple of decades.
Yeah, they keep us moving, that's for sure. I think my family's move here was, I think, our 13th move. So.
Oh, my. And your wife and family are handling that pretty well, Colonel?
Well, they've had 3 years to adjust, so yeah.
And you are now and have been since June 19th, I believe, of 2013, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District. How's that been going, sir?
I'll tell you, it's been an educational experience. I spent most of my career in troop units with a couple of academic assignments, training and teaching cadets who wanted to be officers. So this is really my first experience with the Corps of Engineers. And it's the first unit I've commanded that's been predominantly civilian. So it's been an eye-opening experience, and I've learned an awful lot. And the district, I'll tell you, has been very, very busy. So lots going on, lots to keep me busy.
Well, sir, can you describe what's the area does your district cover, and how many employees do you have?
We've got about 600 employees. We cover 139,000 square miles in five states, so predominantly Minnesota. About half of Wisconsin and North Dakota and pieces of South Dakota and Iowa as well. And in those areas, you know, the Corps is organized by watershed. So we've got the Mississippi, the Minnesota, the Red River, the North, the Souris River in North Dakota, and then also the Rainy River up on the border with Canada.
And you're part of, we were talking earlier, and you said you're part of a region that is the Mississippi waterfront from north to south. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, that watershed organization extends beyond districts to divisions. So every district belongs to a higher headquarters, which is a division. So it's a lot like, in that respect, it's a lot like the rest of the Army. But our division stretches from St. Paul, which, you know, we've got the headwaters of the Mississippi, all the way south to New Orleans, where the Mississippi empties into the Gulf.
So anytime there's any kind of an emergency or a flood or a hurricane or something like that within that district, everybody pulls together?
Yep. We tend to approach all of our problems, whether it's emergency response or even civil works projects. We approach things regionally. So if there's a capability that I don't possess here in my district, one of the other districts in the valley can come help us. And we do the same. We provide capability elsewhere in the Mississippi Valley, depending on what's needed and where.
So, Colonel, it's my understanding that this position is about a three-year tour for you?
Typically, yeah. It's 3 years, and I'm coming up on the end of mine, so.
And it's a little bit of a different organization because, as you said, you've got a lot of civilian employees, but yet the United States Army Colonel is the commander and in charge.
Right.
How does that work out pretty well, sir?
It does. You know, I think it's actually, it's probably harder for the colonel to adjust to than for the civilian employees. You know, they, most of the Corps' employees are used to this. We've got a good mix of experienced folks and newer employees, but everyone who comes to work for the Corps understands they're working for the Department of the Army. And that's one of the things that I think is probably not terribly well understood by most of the American people, is just how much of the Department of the Army, and really the other military departments as well, is comprised of civilian employees. The Corps of Engineers nationwide, actually globally, is about 35,000 employees, the vast majority of whom are civilians, but they are Department of the Army employees. And so they're used to seeing military folks. A lot of the colonels who arrive at the district, myself, my predecessor, and I think his predecessor, had very limited exposure to the Corps of Engineers side of military engineering. And so for us, it's an adjustment. We first get there trying to figure out exactly how we fit in. Whereas I think most of our employees, because they were hired into a specific job to do a specific thing, and they sought that out, you know, they understand their place in the world. Whereas we have to kind of sort that out as we get there.
So most of your employees stay right here in the St. Paul District and been there for a long time and probably understand their jobs and what's going on. And then every few years, here comes a new colonel, another commander. And so you get the good news is your employees have been here and know what's going on and know where all the bodies are buried and know how to take care of things. And then here comes a new commander, and now you've got to sort of integrate with the U.S. Army help get the things done that need to be done.
Yeah, they really are the continuity. So, you know, when we talk about longstanding expertise in say, flood recovery operations or flood risk reduction in the Red River Valley, it's the civilians in this district that make all of those things happen. They really do provide the long-term perspective on things. They really do provide the continuity that we need to keep this operation going. The colonels come in and, you know, our job is to kind of look down the road and see what's maybe needed ahead of, you know, further down at kind of the strategic level. And we also, you know, I think we're supposed to be a fresh set of eyes who comes in and maybe sees where changes could be made or should be made. But by and large, we rely on our civilian workforce that's been here to provide us with some much needed perspective.
We're speaking with Colonel Dan Kaprowski, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, you mentioned flooding, and usually springtime Minnesota, we have some flooding. We've had an easy winter, so I hope spring's going to be good for you. But I know that's one area that the Corps works on, and another area is emergency response operations. And do you spend some time, do your people spend some time coordinating with the other entities in inside the district so that if there's an emergency, you're ready, you know who to call?
We do. One of the mantras in the Corps of Engineers, and I think I mentioned this earlier, is make a friend before you need a friend. And so we have an emergency operations center and an emergency manager and staff here in the district that, you know, they know who their counterparts are in the other agencies in the states that we serve and federal government agencies that serve those same kind of regional or within those same regional boundaries. And they know the relationships they've got to have, they know the people, and they know the procedures in each locality. So we're tied in with the other agencies that we would work with typically. And you know, this is most often in terms of flood response. But yeah, and we haven't had to practice it lately, thank goodness. But if you look back at some of the earlier flooding that we've had in some of our basins, the Corps, FEMA, and state agencies have been tied together very closely.
And Colonel, we just got about a minute left in this segment, but as long as we're talking about flooding, we haven't had a real big problem up in the Red River for a couple of years, as I recall. Have we made any progress up there in long-term planning so that when the next big winter comes, the next big flood comes, we're ready?
We have. That's the project at Fargo-Moorhead has been in the planning stages for a long time. The project was finally authorized by Congress in 2014, and then we received our first push of funding here just recently. And so we expect we might be able to go to construction fairly soon. There are a few hurdles we have to get over. We have to make sure that we've worked out all of our environmental and legal issues, both with the state of North Dakota and with the state of Minnesota. There are a number of permitting processes we have to get through before we can go to construction. But we're confident we can do that and get to construction here fairly soon and provide some flood risk reduction for for those communities.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. We're speaking with Colonel Dan Kaprowski, who is the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been visiting with the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, Colonel Dan Kaprowski. And Colonel, before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about flooding, and we were talking about the Red River, and it brings back to me the visions of what you see in the news on the TV, floods and homes flooded and sandbagging and a bunch of miserable people. And I was born in the Twin Cities, and I've been in Minnesota my whole life, and it seems like that just keeps coming back and back and back. Is there a good long-term plan to try to alleviate some of that spring pain?
There is, and we are right in the middle of it right now. We've spent a number of years planning a diversion channel around the city of Fargo, and we're looking forward to sometime, hopefully in the next year or two, going to construction on that. And that will be a long-term solution. It's going to be a while in construction, but once it's done, I think you won't see those frequent flood fights nearly as much, and hopefully any flooding can be mitigated.
Well, we're looking forward to that, sir, and I'm sure that's a complicated problem with all the engineering that has to be done. Two states have to be dealt with. You've got local governments, you've got local residents, you've got farmers, that's a big headache, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And anytime you involve that many different, hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, somebody's not going to be happy with something that somebody's doing. So it is a complex process, but we're working through it, and I think we'll be able to provide some protection to those communities here in the long term.
And if they all pull together, there's a way to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Sir, as long as we're talking about permits, I understand that the Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District also is responsible for issuing permits for work in wetlands and navigable rivers.
We are. That's one of the kind of five primary missions that the district has, environmental stewardship, and we do that by permitting or not permitting activities that impact waters of the United States. And that's by itself kind of a loaded term because the government recently redefined waters of the United States, but we are working under the set of rules that people are familiar with and have been for a long time. So it can take a number of forms, anything from, a farmer draining a field to, want to do a construction site that's potentially going to impact wetlands. Our regulators will go take a look at it and determine, can we permit this under the law or can we not? And if we do, is there some sort of mitigation required by the permit applicant? So it's a time-consuming process. It can be a very complex process, and it can be either very small or, huge. The Polymet mine in northern Minnesota, for example, comes to mind as a potential sort. That's the sort of project that would need a permit from the Corps of Engineers, well as the state.
So anytime there's any changes coming to whether it's farmland or development, if it's going to impact the wetlands, then they come to the Army Corps of Engineers to get a permit, and you determine how that work is going to have an impact on the environment and the wetlands.
Correct. As long as that wetland is considered one of our jurisdictional waters. So there's some legal things that have to be defined, but yeah, if it's one of our waters, then we do have to permit or not permit.
Well, you've got to have a bunch of your people working on that full time, sir.
Absolutely. I have a staff that does nothing but environmental regulation.
And sir, environmental restoration programs to improve fish and wildlife habitat is also on your website.
And that's another one. And, this is one that I think people don't really realize that the Corps does this. Part of our navigation mission, people are familiar with the locks and dams on the Mississippi River. But if you look at that river now versus, say, 100 years ago, it looks dramatically different. And it's not just the locks and dams. The river was marshier, had more islands, and was a much more natural habitat than it is now. It's a very engineered river in some of its stretches now. And so what our environmental restoration program tries to do is restore habitat to more like what its natural state would have been. So we build islands. We will in some cases attempt to regulate the level of the water in the pools to more closely mimic a natural state. And in that way, bring back indigenous populations, help them flourish a little bit better than they are able to do with maybe a static pool or fewer islands or an environment that's not like their normal state.
So you're not just keeping the channels open so the barges can come and go.
We do that too. We're trying to do a little bit of everything, and it can be a very challenging balancing act, but we think we're doing a pretty good job of it.
And, sir, that kind of leads me into an area that a lot of people don't know about, in that the Corps has recreation activities and facilities and reservoirs, including campgrounds, day use areas, boat ramps, and swimming beaches. You manage a lot more of that than people understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, I'd like to put in a plug for this with summer coming up. Up around the headwaters in Ogallala, Wisconsin, all down the river at our lock and dam sites at Lake Ashtabula, those are all core facilities. And as you said, we've got campgrounds at those places. We've got recreation facilities. And we see about 3 million visitors a year just in the district's recreational facilities. So get out and enjoy it. We've got something for everybody. You know, if you want to boating, fishing, hanging out at the lake, we have all of that and more. And, you know, if there's not a national park or a state park near you, I'll bet you there's a Corps facility. So go out and take part.
We're speaking with the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, Colonel Dan Kaprowski, on Minnesota Military Radio. And, sir, if our listeners want to find out about those campgrounds and swimming beaches and so forth, do they just go online and look for our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District and find your website?
They can. We have a public website that will link them to, you know, to the district's resources. And there's also a USACE national website, public website, that they can find resources as well. You know, because it's not just the St. Paul District. The Corps of Engineers has rec facilities all across the country.
So if you're looking for something to do this summer, check out U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District website and get on there and rent some of the campgrounds from the Colonel's folks. Colonel, I think you mentioned earlier that the Corps of Engineers is having a birthday.
We are, yeah. The district here, actually, it's specifically the St. Paul District, the first district headquarters was set up here 150 years ago. So we are right in the middle of our, they call it the sesquicentennial celebration, our 150th year. And we kicked it off with the military ball at the beginning of the year. We're planning a year's worth of celebrations to kind of commemorate the service that the district has provided to the people of this region for 150 years.
It's hard to believe that it's been 150 years. I've heard about the Corps of Engineers since I started growing up here in the Twin Cities, but since you and your predecessor, Colonel Price, have come on the show, we've learned an awful lot more about the Army Corps of Engineers because it's a lot more than just dredging and keeping channels open, isn't
it? Absolutely. It sure is.
And you've got a lot of good people over in St. Paul to help you.
We do. You know, I'm getting ready to change out here this summer, and if I could leave my predecessor with one thing, it would be get out and see the district and meet the people who work in the district. I have been continually impressed by the breadth and depth of their knowledge. These folks come to work every day, and they work extremely hard. And all of those missionaries that we talked about, they're some of the most talented, dedicated public servants I've ever been around. And that's what I would tell them, is go out and meet your people, because they are doing great work for the people of the communities that we serve every single day.
Sir, we just got a couple minutes left. When you think back on your 3 years here as commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, what do you think about? Is there any highlights that are special?
That'd be the first thing. You know, as we talked about earlier, didn't have a lot of experience with the Corps of Engineers before. So learning exactly how broad our mission set was, and seeing how many different kinds of things that we do and the people that do those things, that's really been the highlight for me. Not having, you know, worked with a lot of civilians before, just the sheer volume of things that they deal with in a day blows me away, and their ability to handle it all, you know, kind of defines grace under pressure. I really do appreciate all that they do, and I think if people knew what the employees of the St. Paul District were out there doing to serve their communities, they would be blown away.
Sir, we've got about a minute left. Any idea what's next for Colonel Kaprowski? Are you going back to the U.S. Army, or are you going to stay with Corps of Engineers, or maybe you don't know?
You know, I'll tell you, I don't know yet. I have an inkling that I may be headed back to Washington, D.C., but at this point, that is still just an inkling. I wish I had a little more definition, particularly this late in the game, but I think.
So there's some general sitting there somewhere saying, what are we going to do with this colonel that's been up in St. Paul for 3 years doing a good job with the St. Paul District?
I hope that's what he's saying.
Well, yeah. Sir, it's been a joy having you on the show during your command here, and I hope you and your family, wherever you're going next, pick somewhere nice and warm and fun for the next chapter of your career.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on.
Colonel, any final, about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about the St. Paul District, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers?
Yeah, you know, the last thing I'd leave you with is that whether it's navigation on the river or environmental regulation, whatever it is that we do, I think wherever we touch the communities that we serve, they're better off for it. And so, you know, get to know the Corps of Engineers, get to know the resources that we provide, because there's an awful lot out there for you.
Sir, thanks for taking the time to join us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
My pleasure.
That was the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, Colonel Dan Kaprowski. When we come back, we'll get an update from the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company spotlight is Allianz Life. Allianz Life is a leading provider of retirement solutions and a strong supporter of those who serve and have served our nation. They partner closely with local Yellow Ribbon community networks to provide volunteer employees who help with projects supporting elderly veterans and military families. Allianz Life has strong veteran recruiting programs because they know the value of a veteran leader can bring to their organization. They have brought together other Yellow Ribbon companies to share best practices for military support initiatives, and they have found ways throughout the year to honor current military-connected employees. Allianz Life has been a proud Yellow Ribbon company since August of 2013 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to catch up with the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
During the month of April, the state of Minnesota takes time to recognize the Month of the Military Child in order to emphasize the important role military children play while a parent or an important adult is serving. The children of service members sacrifice a great deal when their parent is deployed, and they are rarely recognized for that sacrifice. Children of service members deal with many issues unique to their situation. Some move frequently, others worried about the loved one in harm's way, or just feel the stress of being separated from a parent for an extended period of time. All of these issues can make normal childhood activities more difficult. During this month, Governor Mark Dayton will send military children a letter of gratitude in honor of their service and sacrifice. To register a military child to receive a letter from the governor, contact MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Blake Rondo from the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. Blake, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Blake, that's a long name for a hockey team. I don't think I've ever heard one that long.
It's a bit of a mouthful.
So it stands for Honorably Discharged Veterans that are disabled, have some type of a VA rating, and get together to play a little hockey.
Yes, those are the two requirements, basically, to be a Minnesota Warrior, is you need to have an honorable discharge and you need to have a VA service connection.
All right, let's check on that, and we'll apply that to you. I understand you were a member of the United States Marine Corps.
I was. Semper Fi.
There he goes. We got the Marine in the studio again. We're in trouble. And when did you serve?
08 to 2012.
And what was your job in the Marines?
I was an 08-11 artillery cannoneer.
What?
Exactly.
Artillery.
Yep.
And you got out in 2012, and I assume since you're part of the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team that you were honorably discharged.
I was indeed.
And you have some kind of a disability due to your service to country?
Tinnitus right now, but and a hernia as well to go with the artillery.
And some knee problems.
Yeah, definitely.
But you enjoyed your time in the Marine Corps.
I did, and I'm still allowed to skate a little bit, so a little slower than I used to, but we still have fun.
Now, I understand that you're a student worker at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
I am, and that was a gift to me, so that I'm very happy with that. I am allowed to work with vets, and that's why I joined the hockey team, is to be around veterans and to be able to work there and kind of continue on with service and serving veterans is really important to me.
So you get a chance to help Commissioner Shalito, who we just heard from, and he's got a big job taking care of about 370,000 veterans in Minnesota.
He does. I don't want that job quite yet.
Well, I think the general's going to keep it for a while,
definitely.
So do a good job of helping him. Now tell me, What's the history? Where did the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team, how did that start?
Well, it started with a guy named Andy Qualley, and he was an Army vet. And in 2010, he got out, and he just wanted to start a hockey league, one of his passions. And biggest thing he could do was ask a couple of people, come together. We had four originally. We have 97 members now, 75 of them active. And 13 board members, so came a long way in 6 years.
Now, somehow I'm visualizing a sheet of ice and a bunch of beat-up veterans out there trying to skate. It does look better than that, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, we've started practices once a week, and we get out there, we kind of work on fundamentals, and then we also have three teams to kind of fit and suit the players' capabilities. We have a black team that is for people who are very new to hockey or are limited by their disability, which we do have veterans that are missing some digits, so it's helpful for them to still kind of come for the camaraderie and play hockey at their pace. We have a green team that is, maybe they played Bantams, maybe they have some of their old Mike gloves still around, but they can still make it back and forth on the ice. And then we have a white team that we play against the NHL alumni team, and we do a couple more events. Those guys like to think that they're pretty hot stuff.
Are they competitive?
They try to be. Maybe for the first period. Then the NHL, they'd like to turn it up a little bit on us.
Just to show you who's boss,
right?
And maybe you run out of gas a little bit too.
Yeah.
All right. So you're up to about 97 players. What's the plan? Are you trying to get some teams in other parts of the state?
Definitely. Right now, we're in the Twin Cities, but we have a lot of people that drive over an hour to come and practice and be a part of this. So we realize that it's special to other people and that we need to expand out. So right now, our focus is kind of getting a team in Duluth, maybe one in Rochester, Fergus Falls. Anywhere we can get interest, we want to make a team.
We're speaking with Blake Rondeau about the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Blake, we've said that anyone can join, and they'd have to be interested in playing hockey, and they have to have an honorable discharge and a VA rating. If they want to join, how do they do that?
Well, it's easy. We have our forms are on our website, and that's mnwarriors.com. Pretty easy. If you live in Minnesota, it's mnwarriors.com. You go there, you hit the forms page. They should all be right there. You print them out, you sign them, and then you look at our calendar for the events, go to a practice, and bring your gear and your forms and start skating.
Now, here in the Twin Cities, where do you skate?
At Braemar Ice Arena right now, but we like to switch it up about quarterly so that we can get, like I said, we have people driving over an hour to come to practices, so we try and make it more convenient. We go to Blaine, we go to Richfield, wherever we can get ice.
Now, as you say there's practices, how often are the practices, and is this a seasonal league?
Practices are once a week, pretty much throughout the whole year. But there are seasonal leagues, like our black team, our green team. This year they competed in the AHA, which is American Hockey Association. And so they competed for that hockey season. But we do keep the group going all year round.
Now, professional hockey seems like it kind of goes most of the year these days. What's the main season for the games?
About September through March is a typical season, unless you can make the playoffs, and then you'll be into maybe April, May.
So you're right at the end of the season for this year?
Yes.
There are a few games left, or are we done?
There are. The black team, they made it into the playoffs. They are in the AHA D3 rating, I believe, or in the D group, and they're in their playoffs. The green team did not. They just got moved up, so they didn't make the playoffs, so they're done.
Well, how about the hotshots on the white team?
They like to play tournaments. They have a game in April 7th. They're going to be out in Detroit in the Fraser area, actually, which is to raise funds and to raise awareness into Michigan and have them start a Warrior team as well.
So for our listeners out there, if we have some honorably discharged veterans that have some kind of a VA rating, coming up now in the spring and summer, it'd be a good time to join so that they can play during the season next year and maybe get into some of these tournaments and playoffs.
Definitely. Sharpen the skates, kind of knock the rust off by coming to a weekly practice, and then you'll get a rating. on what team you'll be on, and then we can just put you on the team, get you a jersey.
Now, you're a Marine. How feisty are the practices?
I mean, it depends. There gets a little chirping every now and again. We like to scrimmage for the last half of our practices, and we know who has skills sometimes, and they like to get a little edgy on there, and sometimes you got to throw a little hip check.
So do you keep a medic around these practices?
I think some of them are actually medics, so they like to do their own self-appraisal.
But nobody gets really hurt.
No. We like to keep a clean game. I mean, like I said, we have some guys are with prosthetic legs and arms and stuff, so we keep it pretty clean. But every now and again, we like to have fun.
So, Blake, you're organized as a 501c3 nonprofit?
We are.
And you've got 97 players. What do you do for funding? How do you pay the bills?
A lot of it is through our tournaments, which is why we have the white team. We'll come to events and kind of raise money there, selling our product. But those tournaments are funded by the Hendrickson Foundation, the Fisher House. I mean, we're really backed by our sponsors, and very thankful that they allow us to go out and play and to kind of bring both hockey and disabled vets around the state to show them what we still do.
So private donations from some corporate sponsors, some individuals, and you take those good hockey players, those hot shots, and put them out there and make them make some money.
Yes, we do.
Well, I think that's a good thing to do to those guys.
I do too. It keeps it real light.
Blake, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. We're speaking with Blake Rondo on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Kellogg, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. This coming June, over 800 high schoolers will travel to Minnesota Boys State and Minnesota Girls State. They are premier programs in Minnesota for hands-on learning about grassroots democracy. The students will create their own parties, elect their own legislature and state officers, and become better citizens of our great nation. Please join the American Legion family still serving America. Contact us at mnlegion.org. That's mnlegion.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to talk a little bit more with Blake Rondo from the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team, and then we're going to get an update on the USS Minnesota. So, Blake, we've been talking about your hockey team, Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. The information on that can be found at mnwarriors.com. And we've been talking about the fact that any service member that was honorably discharged has a VA rating, no matter what service they were in, active duty, guard, reserve, that makes them eligible to sign up and play. And you've got about 97 members so far. And you practice every week. Now, I hear, I'm not into hockey, but I hear ice time's kind of expensive.
It is. Ice time, getting our uniforms, getting pads, everything, it all adds up pretty quickly.
So do your members pay in something, or do you try to raise enough funds so that you hold the price down, or does everybody contribute?
Everyone pays for their USA hockey number, which they have to log in and just kind of be covered under that. But as for playing on the Warriors, you don't have to pay anything. We try to raise all of our funds and have done so far to continue playing.
So you're raising funds to cover the ice time and the uniforms and probably some entry fees and those kind of things?
Yes, and it all adds up, like I say. And so, I mean, we can't do that without our sponsors. Like I mentioned earlier, Hendrickson Foundation, Larry Hendrickson there, he likes to give out to vets, and he likes our mission and likes to make sure that we get around the state so that all the vets here, 169,000, come out and have a place on the hockey team if they want it.
Okay, and then the rest of your funding comes from other grants and donations and corporations and private folks, and if they want to find out how to do that, they can go to mnwarriors.com. I'm sure it's a growing budget when you've got that many members and you're trying to grow anyway. And paying for the ice time and the uniforms and all of that, you could use a little bit of help. Now, you said you're trying to expand and you're going to add some teams around Minnesota?
Yes, we're currently looking in Duluth right now to start our second team. But we do want a team out in Brainerd, Baxter, and into Fergus Falls, Moorhead, and hopefully Rochester. so that we can limit the travel time that these veterans have to take, because our ice time normally comes at the end of nights, so because that's where it's cheapest, and we don't want to make them drive an hour, hour and a half away from their family to come and then drive all the way back. So we're trying to make teams all around the state and present a little bit of quality of life with some hockey as well.
Seems like you just named some of those towns where we always see those high school hockey teams in the playoffs every year from northern Minnesota.
They've been known to farm out a few.
And some of those go off and join the military and then come home and still have a little itch to get out and skate.
Definitely. If they can't make the NHL and they do serve, they can make our team.
Now, when you get those other teams established up there, you're going to have a rotation? You're going to play each other?
Oh, hopefully. That will be the biggest kind of armed forces battle, I think, would be great in Minnesota to have that kind of be an annual event and see what kind of response we can get from people.
So for all our listeners and the 29 stations around Minnesota, if you're a veteran honorably discharged and have a VA rating and have an itch to join and get back into hockey, it's Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. You find information at mnwarriors.com. And you've said that the practices get a little feisty once in a while, but nobody gets hurt.
No, nobody ever gets hurt. But it's one of those things where when vets get together, we like to jaw at each other. And, you know, that's the key of this group. It's meant to be a healing group. I mean, we take people with PTSD as well as with disabilities. So they're obviously working through whatever it is when they come home. And so we get an opportunity once a week to come and skate it out and be with military people and just wear a different uniform.
And once in a while, you're going to have one of these Marines get a little rowdy. What do you do about that?
You know, there's not enough Marines on the team, if I can make a very selfish prop into here. So if we have any Marines that want to join, please come out.
So there's a call out from Blake, all your Marines out there that can skate. You need some buddies on the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. Blake, we've only got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, all I can think about is that we're very happy with the support that we're getting, and we only hope that more can come so that we can make this reach statewide and hopefully nationwide for veterans who have an interest in it, that it's fulfilled.
Blake, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Blake Rondo from the Minnesota Warrior Disabled Veteran Hockey Team. Information can be found at mnwarriors.com. Joining me now is Brian Scon, the president of the Minnesota Navy League. Brian, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate your support of the Navy League and USS Minnesota.
Well, that's the topic of the day. I haven't talked to you for a while. How's the captain, the crew, and the boat doing?
Well, the crew is doing outstanding. Like usual, they're very motivated. They're some of the best sailors in the Navy because they're highly sought after. They're an elite group of sailors because the sub force takes only elite sailors. They do a great job. And Commander Tanaka, the commanding officer, is always been so impressed with the quality of the sailors that he gets in the sub force.
Well, and we're looking forward to having him and some of his crew on the show later in the year so that we can get an in-person update. So we'll have to schedule that, Brian. But I understand the boat's been in for some updates and repairs, and can we look forward to seeing it get out to sea this summer?
Yeah, the standard operating process of any submarine after commissioning is to go into a post-commissioning maintenance period called a PSA. And our boat's been a little bit extended because they've had some unforeseen circumstances that have caused them to be a little delayed. But I have some good news in that we just learned this week, actually, the last week of March, that the commanding officer and the chief of the boat want to come out for a visit in July. And the reason they want to come in July is because they'll be busy towards the end of the year, or the second half of the year. That's good news.
Great.
It tells me a whole lot.
Now, I understand that as long as the USS Minnesota is there, that's a focus for the Minnesota Navy League, but there's also a new ship under construction.
Yeah, we're pretty excited because one of our 2015 initiatives was to establish, get USS Minneapolis-St. Paul back into the fleet. And if you remember, Minneapolis-St. Paul was on a previous submarine that was decommissioned, and the same year it was decommissioned, USS Minnesota was named. So we are now, the second USS Minneapolis-St. Paul is called a littoral combat ship. And what makes her interesting, basically she's a 400-foot-long frigate-type ship. But what's even more interesting, she's built in Marionette, Wisconsin. So that's just 45 minutes north of Green Bay. I've always been a little, I will always struggle with the fact that a bunch of Packer backers are going to build that ship.
Well, maybe we get a chance to go up and see that one soon, Brian. Just got a couple of minutes left. I know you've got an annual meeting coming up and an air show up in Duluth.
Yeah, we keep busy. On April 18th, we have our annual meeting, and we have a primary speaker in Pete Hegseth, who's often on Fox News, and he's from Minnesota. He's also the president of Concerned Veterans for America. That's on April 18th at the Uptown VFW, and everybody's welcome to come and hear it. It's from 6 to 9 p.m., and you can get details on our website at NavyLeagueMN.org. Additionally, we're supporting the F-18, the U.S. Navy F-18 demo team at the Duluth Air Show July 9th and 10th. And then, of course, we have our Navy Ball on October 15th, and we're also doing a special recognition of Pearl Harbor, the 75th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. And that's coming in toward the later part of the year.
So, Brian, if some of our listeners out there were in the Navy or any military service and want to get involved in the Navy League, how do they go about it?
Well, on our website at NavyLeagueMN.org, we have a link to our national headquarters where they start the membership process. And the key thing to remember is I was never in the Navy. I was never in the military, and we are a civilian organization that supports. So we allow anyone to join, because and any military enthusiast to join our group. So at NavyLeague.org is the primary, the national headquarters website, NavyLeague.org.
Brian, we're looking forward to working with you in the future. Updates on the USS Minnesota, and we'll have to follow the construction of the Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today. That was Brian Skahn, president of the Minnesota Navy League. We're just about out of time. We have one mention today. Scoops for Troops will be held Sunday, April 24th at Arden Hills Army Training Site. It's a family-friendly event for civilians, veterans, and military families. A 5K run, 3K walk is followed by an ice cream, food, social, and silent auction. Fundraised benefit Fallen Heroes Children Education Fund through Tribute to the Troops. For more information, go to scoopsfortroops.net. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Dan Kaprowski, Blake Rondo, Brian Skahn from the Minnesota Navy League, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the new State Veterans Cemetery in southern Minnesota and check in with the 934th Airlift Wing. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.